south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Well, back again, right off the heels of my latest Expat Insider Seminar. Once again, a roaring success, and once again, with a lot of people there smarter than me. You know me, I live my life off the gringo tourist trail, so I'm used to being the smartest guy in the room. Wait, that didn't come out right. Not that I'm the smartest guy in the room, let's just say I'm the most educated guy in the room. Yep, there's a lot of very smart Latinos and Latinas, but you know, this is Latin America where they copy nearly everything we do up in the States, good and bad. Which is part of our gringo advantage, so I shouldn't knock it, but you know that already, right? You think higher education in the first world has taken a turn for the worst and is heading into the dumpster. You should see it down here. At least up in the public universities in the States, they don't have signs and posters like they do down here in the public universities, paying homage to the likes of Hugo Chavez, Castro, and Che Guevara. Then again, maybe they do. I haven't visited a university campus up in the States for probably 30 years now. Good thing, too, because what I've heard from others is that a trip to a U.S. campus could be pretty depressing. So, anyway, this is my first show coming off the seminar. And yes, there were high points and there were low points. First, the low point. Man, just like you up in the States, we had some cold weather down here, unseasonably cold. And then, as luck would have it, the very first night, the meet and greet, people who'd just flown in from the States were sneezing and sniffling. I mean, hey, why not? The big story up in the States is that the flu has hit half the population up there, right? A real nasty kind of flu, too. Well, guess what? It took its toll on our seminar attendees, too. In fact, it just didn't meander through, it galloped through. Nearly every one of us got hit with it, including me. Haven't had a cold or flu in 5 years or so. Oh, I got through it all right, but I have to admit, for a couple hours, maybe even a day or so, I felt that I'd lost my mojo. Just kind of foggy, not firing on all cylinders. You know what that's like. At least for me, anyway, there was very little coughing or hacking. That's a good thing, right? However, as the flu galloped through, some of our seminar attendees got hit really hard. In fact, one young lady got hit so hard, she went into the emergency room for a full workup. But after the appropriate medicaments and potions, you know, a lot of shamans down here, right? True, but they don't hang out at hospitals, you know? Anyway, she made it back to the seminar the next day, all in good time, and told me the total cost of her emergency room treatment at a very first world hospital, in fact, one we'd visited the day before. Total cost? Well, I want you to formulate a number in your own head. What would it cost you to go to an emergency room for treatment without the benefit of insurance coverage? Now, that's not to say this lady's first world insurance plan won't pick up the charges eventually. They do, you know. Why? Because it's so damn cheap down here. Guess how cheap? Would you believe $500? Yep, that was a total charge without insurance. And you know, when talk of that went around the group, people were saying they'd be lucky with their insurance up in the States to pay $500 for the deductible or copay for an emergency room visit. Oh, and by the way, not so long ago, I accompanied a gringo who had Latin American insurance down here to that very same hospital. His Latin American insurance plan, he paid something like $75 a month for. Anyway, he had the emergency room workup for what they thought was a kidney stone, went through all the tests and everything. The total bill came out to around $1,000 for a full day. Again, without insurance, and the copay for that person with his insurance plan. Because, you know, everything's got a copay these days or a deductible. Would you believe $50? All right, so one young lady headed to the emergency room. Another one of our attendees, a young lady, also got hit pretty hard. She felt terrible and she lost her voice. Glad that didn't happen to me. Maybe some of the other attendees would have liked to have seen that, but I'm glad I didn't lose my pipes or my cool during the seminar. Anyway, her and her husband had planned on staying on after the seminar in the cool little town of Antigua, Guatemala. For those of you who don't know it, it's a small colonial town, maybe 20,000, that's a UNESCO World Heritage Site. So it's not, by any means, Costa Rica, Disneyland, or Cancun-style tourism. It's pure eco-tourism. I've heard some expats and gringos say it's the perfect Latin getaway for those who can't stand being around entitled, whiny-ass American kids addicted to their smartphone. So anyway, I was talking about the second young lady that got hit hard by the flu. Her husband, very cool guy, well, they're both very cool people, sent me this series of emails and reports on the health status of his wife. As usual, I'll paraphrase a bit here. On the first email, he says, "Johnny, this is the couple from the seminar that hails from Missouri, otherwise known as Misery. You know, Johnny, my wife keeps getting sicker with this flu, and I think she should see someone. We have insurance that should cover just about anywhere in the world. Any suggestions in Antigua, Guatemala? Or maybe since it's Saturday, we'll have to truck into Guatemala City. Though, we'll need to know the name and directions of the hospital we visited at the seminar. All right, meet Johnny again to let you know that great little town of Antigua, Guatemala is about an hour or so from the big, massive city, Guatemala City. How big? How massive? Around 2 million or so. And just for your information, there are very safe little vans that drive back and forth about every hour or two. The cost? $10 to $12 one way. There are many little pickup points in Antigua, Guatemala, including the Central Park, and they'll take you to pretty much any hotel in Guatemala City or the airport. Again, for $10 or $12. And I wrote back, you don't have to return to Guatemala City. You can go to a hospital called Hermano Pedro. It's totally first world, and the gringos and expats in Antigua, Guatemala always go there when in distress. You'll be in good hands. By the way, he was also in contact with our expat concierge chief, Jen, and she recommended a certain pharmacy he should go to. Then he wrote back, guess what? We ended up at that pharmacy. Jen's recommendation. They sent us to a doctor a few blocks away called Laboratorios La Merced. His name was Dr. Sergio Castaneda. After finding a lab tech who spoke English, he said, the doc is out for the day. It's Saturday. But they're calling the doctor's father, a retired doc. Cool. Another adventure south of the border, I thought. So, Johnny, he sent us to another doctor. There we were, Saturday, after hours, explaining to the doc it was a semi-emergency visit for my wife. She had a full exam. And what did it set me back? $30. Yep, you heard it. 30. And I have to tell you, the patient waiting room was not like any you'd find in the States. It was a semi-open and covered waiting room that had coffee plants blooming with roses and a lot of assorted foliage. It was, in fact, kind of a patio garden. By the way, he sent me a couple of pictures, too. Turns out, he said, the doc and the lab tech spoke better English than I. The doc stayed an hour past closing time to take care of my wife. I'm attaching a few pictures of his waiting room and the street sign. And do check out the coffee plants. The coffee beans are red and ripe and ready to pick. You might want to include him as an example of how wonderful and inexpensive things are here. Did I mention $30? I still can't get over it. Holy Trump, he says. All right, so the flu sweeping through the seminar was a low point, but as for high points, man, we had a ton of them. That is, if drinking from the fire hose can be called a high point. Wow, especially for the Bitcoin and cryptocurrency presentation given by the famous Bitcoin Dan. Luckily, he's giving everyone his PowerPoint presentation so they can go at it at something slightly less than Dan's speed, which is only slightly less than the speed of light. And then, on that same day, back-to-back, we had Oscar Minor. No, not Oscar Mayer, Oscar Minor. And he too opened up the valve on the fire hose, bringing along with him and explaining in some detail some of the various pieces of hardware he uses to mine cryptocurrencies. Stuff that pretty much anyone should be able to use to start mining themselves. He started out by showing us some of the very first little mining devices, little flash drives, that he bought online way back in 2014. So he started way back when almost no one had heard of Bitcoin yet. And back then, there were really no other crypto coins to mine, only Bitcoin. But now, Oscar's got multiple pieces of hardware that mine various different kinds of coins, Ethereum, Litecoin, In fact, he says the gadgets are pretty much universal now. You just program them to mine whatever coin you want them to mine. And there are websites and programs that'll tell you which coins are most profitable to mine for any particular day, so you can switch in and out of them. By the way, just a little hint for all you listeners out there, both Bitcoin Dan and Oscar Miner say definitely stay away from Ripple. And though Ethereum just might shoot to the moon, in the next couple of years, it's going to fall flat. Just a few hints of what you missed if you didn't come down to the seminar. Anyway, speaking of cryptos, as I record this, all the cryptos have taken a huge hit. They're down 20, 40, even some of them 50%, but that's the ride you're on when you're in the Bitcoin and cryptocurrency game. Speaking of how people get thick-skinned, or should get thick-skinned when it's the roller coaster ride that it is, one guy at the seminar, who's a Bitcoin millionaire, by the way, said, "I used to think it was nerve-wracking a year or two ago when I'd lose or gain something like $5,000 or $10,000 a day. It was exciting to watch what gamblers call the juice." He said, "You don't want to bet the farm on it, but you do want to bet something." Man, he said, "Back then I was afraid to wake up in the morning and look at the price charts. But now," he says, "I'm seeing my fortunes swing in one day, the amount of salary my dad made in 10 years. And then I said to him, "Well, I can imagine how nerve-wracking that is." Then he surprised me by saying, "Well, not really, Johnny. If you got in very early like I did," he said, "you get used to the swings. You just get used to them." Then he said, "By the way, if you ever meet my dad, and he is coming down in a few months, don't mention anything about that salary analogy. It might hurt his feelings." So that said, I'm sure you want to know what Bitcoin Dan and Oscar Miner's predictions are for the upcoming year. Well, you had to be there at the seminar to get it all, but I'll give you some hints, but not today. Oh, one last thing about cryptos. I saw a blog the other day saying that a kid has been born and they named him Bitcoin. The first recorded case of such a name given to a kid. Guess where that happened? Russia. Is that a good idea? Is that a positive trend? I don't think so. I bet that kid's going to be in for a tough life. If anything, it'll toughen him up, because on his way through life, he's going to get his ass kicked a lot. He'll be mocked and taunted. On top of that, you can be sure he's going to face a lot of kidnapping attempts. What were his idiot parents thinking? Oh, and speaking of fads and trends in kids' names, you know what the number one name for newborns in Europe is right now? I don't know if you're going to want to hear this, but it's Mohammed. Then again, it makes sense. Europeans are not having babies, Muslims are flooding in, and one of their number one priorities is to have kids. Oh, and on the same subject, talked to my brother the other day up in Chicago. Told me that in certain neighborhoods, lots of little Obamas running around in diapers. Which begs the question, will somebody please tell me what happened to the country I grew up in? That's a rhetorical question, by the way. Speaking of Bitcoin babies, seems like lately among the nerdish community and crossing over slightly into the mainstream, we're starting to see cryptocurrency logos everywhere. Bitcoin, Ethereum, Litecoin, but mostly Bitcoin logos. Everyone knows that symbol now. Personally, I've been seeing more and more Bitcoin t-shirts, hats, belt buckles, backpacks, coffee mugs, bumper stickers, lunchboxes. Well, maybe not lunchboxes. You know what I mean. You've seen that stuff too. And just a year ago, you saw none of it. But now that it's big news and edging towards mainstream, people are proud to point out to the rest of the world that they're part of that exclusive little cryptocurrency crowd. Meanwhile, you have to remember there's a lot of techno-hacker bad guys out there. And it's no longer just about hacking into your computer or crypto exchange and stealing your coins. There's some violent guys out there now, too. Yep, the reports are filtering in more and more these days. They know a certain amount of people who made big money in cryptocurrencies are young and innocent. And they actually want to tell their friends and the world through social media that they made a ton of money in crypto. And they'll sport crypto logos on hats, belts, and coffee mugs, too. Well, it might have been cool way back when cryptos were cheap, but now, I don't know. So, by wearing a Bitcoin t-shirt, hat, or crypto wardrobe, or naming your kid Bitcoin, or posting your good luck all over social media, might you be asking for trouble? You think? However, now, I understand some of the best-selling t-shirts and clothing items on Amazon have cryptocurrency logos. Which I suppose in a way is good news, because in time every shoeshine boy and tuk-tuk driver in Latin America will have a Bitcoin t-shirt too. Maybe that's a good thing, but meanwhile, if you were an early adopter of Bitcoin paraphernalia, well, I think you might want to leave it in the closet or donate it to Goodwill or something. Hey, how do you think those things end up down here in Latin America? All right, on to some emails, and it's kind of a mixed bag today, a huge mixed bag, because I haven't been able to get to any emails for a week or so. Got, well, way too many of them. Anyway, this one from George in Medellin, Colombia, is coincidentally about cryptos. He says, "Dear Johnny, do you recommend hardware wallets like Ledger and Trezor or not? My friends here in Medellin who are doing crypto are willing to fork out the $100 or so for a hardware wallet. But we have a hard time getting our hands on those things. You can order them from Amazon, but Amazon takes weeks and weeks to get here in Colombia. And the shipping, to say it's overpriced is putting it mildly. So for now, most of us are just sticking to the software wallets like Coinbase, BitPay, and Infoet Blockchain, etc. And unlike hardware wallets, they're free. By the way, Johnny," George says, "you know, since the latest thing with cryptocurrencies is having a hardware wallet, it kind of gives a new, deeper, and more profound meaning to that time-worn phrase, officer, someone stole my wallet. Worse yet, what about the implications of the phrase you never want to say? Officer, a hooker stole my wallet. Yep, an embarrassing situation under the best of circumstances. Now, Johnny, I bring that up because I live in Medellin. And as you brought up in a previous show, Colombia is a country that's in the top five of sex tourism throughout the world. So cops down here are used to hearing that phrase, officer, a hooker stole my wallet. Now imagine if it wasn't a regular old wallet, but a hardware crypto wallet. That would, of course, imply you had to have been robbed by a very computer-literate hooker. So I guess, Johnny, that's the kind of future we have to look forward to. I understand, by the way, that sort of thing is starting to happen in certain parts of Russia, Moscow in particular. I have a friend who visited there recently. He stopped in a cafe internet where those kind of rumors were flying. So what's your take, Johnny? Hardware or software wallets for crypto?" Well, thanks for that, Medellin George. You know, a lot of people don't even know what you're talking about when you're speaking of hardware or software cryptocurrency wallets. Since, of course, most people aren't into crypto at all, not yet, just a small percentage. And at first, you know, there were no hardware wallets. Hardware meaning it's an actual physical thing you hold in your hand. Looks like a flash drive or something on that line that plugs into your USB slot. It just means it's a device you can hold in your hand and take with you. Although, it's your bank. It's not like a wallet that has your cryptocurrency in it, because you know your cryptocurrency exists out there on the blockchain in the ether. But it's a means to store your private keys, which you should never give out to anyone or have out on the net either, because if anyone else gets them, it's like having a key to a safety deposit box. Anyway, early on, there were no hardware wallets, and now I suggest everyone have one who's doing any crypto at all. Sure, it's $100 or so up front, but you're secure in knowing that anybody who hacks a website or an exchange like Coinbase or Motgox, remember that name, Motgox? An exchange that doesn't exist anymore. Anyway, a hack will have no effect on you at all because you hold your own hardware wallet. However, here's the kicker. Suppose you had some Bitcoin or Litecoin or Bitcoin Cash, whatever, and you wanted to buy an Amazon gift card for $1,000 or $2,000. You know, that's one way to buy things on Amazon, because you can't buy directly with cryptocurrency yet. Though they say it's coming very soon, just like at Overstock.com. They take Bitcoin, Amazon's biggest competitor. Anyway, suppose you wanted to use your Bitcoin or whatever to buy something on Amazon. You can't directly. So you buy an Amazon gift card, and you can do that through crypto that you have in a wallet on the service or exchange called BitPay. They're the ones right now, along with eGifter, another card service that works directly with Amazon gift cards. So you can have a wallet at this exchange, BitPay. It's a software wallet, and it's the only service that's authorized to buy Amazon gift cards. So you have to get your crypto into that wallet to buy one. The trick is to move a little of your crypto from your hardware wallet into the BitPay wallet, whatever, the software wallet, and get out really fast. In other words, your hardware wallet, you know, the one you hold in your hand, it looks like a little flash drive or somewhat like one, is your motherlode. That's your bank. That's where you keep all your cryptocurrencies until you want to spend them. So then let's say you want to buy an Amazon gift card. Say it's $1,000. The safest way to pull that off is move $1,000 worth of Bitcoin, whatever, into the BitPay software wallet. Use that BitPay wallet to buy your Amazon gift card because they're the only service that's authorized to do so. And you're done. You with me so far? Now you're all set. You got $1,000 credit in your Amazon account. By the way, those Amazon gift card credits last forever, at least so they say. By the way, I'm giving you some ideas now on how to spend your cryptocurrency, if you're wondering. Because you know you could accumulate a lot of crypto, but you want to spend it once in a while too, don't you? Oh, and by the way, another great service to spend your cryptos is Expedia, you know, the airline consolidators. They take Bitcoin directly too. But you see, if you get a refund after you've paid with crypto, for whatever reason, trip canceled, change your mind, returning or exchanging a product, they'll send a refund in crypto, usually Bitcoin, to a BitPay or Coinbase software wallet. So, if they do, you want to pull it out and put it back into your hardware wallet so it's truly safe. So the point is, you want to spend $100 or so to get a hardware wallet. That'll be your bank. You can have a software or software wallets too on Coinbase, BitPay, whatever. But you use that as kind of an in-between transfer account for smaller purchases or exchanges. That way, if anything happens with that software account, it's hacked, it's locked up, a government takes it down, whatever, you've still got your bank or your mother load sitting in your hand in that little hardware wallet. No one can ever get to that except you, unless, of course, you're really stupid. Although, I know some gringos and expats who have two identical hardware wallets. In other words, they bought two Nanos or two Trezors at the same time. So then you think maybe they're way too cautious? Well, listen to this. Here's a scenario that's happened to a few different people. Now, you know, when you first unpack that device and stick it in your computer, it's going to spit out 24 secret words. Those are your private keys, and you're supposed to write them down and hide them real good. Now, of course, those private keys are embedded in your little hardware wallet, your Trezor or Nano, whatever, automatically. So you might never need to know those keys you've written down and hidden somewhere. However, if your little hardware wallet goes through the washing machine, gets run over by a truck, or just gets lost, what do you do then? Well, you pull out those keys, or they call them seeds sometimes. Take another new treasure or an old treasure that you've wiped. You know, you can wipe them too and start over. Plug in those 24-word keys, and hey, you got your mother load. Your bank is back. But then, why do some people have two identical ones? Well, that's because cryptocurrencies are now so popular, such a backlog on ordering those things, it can take up to 2 months to get one from Amazon or anywhere else. So then what if your little device does get run over by a truck? You gotta order one. 2 months. And you've got no access to your funds till one arrives and you've got it in your hot little hands and plug in the keys. So some gringos and expats in the crypto game have two, just in case. You can use either one of them. They're identical, like twins, except now, if one gets destroyed, goes through the laundry, or gets chewed up by a dog, and man, that's the usual way they go, getting chewed up by a dog. Hey, if your socks and shoes are well stowed and you've got your hardware wallet laying around, that's what your dog's going to go for. Now, you're thinking if someone steals your little hardware wallet, that little flash drive looking thing, you're screwed because they got everything, right? Wrong. Because when you or anyone else sticks that in his computer, it's going to ask for a password. You'll do that the very first time you plug in your device. It'll ask you to put in a password. Now, here's the cool part. Even if you have a really simple password, a stupid one like 123456 or something like that, I know, who'd be dumb enough to use that one? Or even admin. Well, it's been estimated that throughout the world, millions of people use those same passwords. Anyway, the way those hardware wallets are configured, if you don't get the password right on the first time, there's a time delay before you can put it in again. And if you don't get it on the second time, there's a much bigger time delay. And third time, a huge time delay. So that helps to foil bad guys and no-good-nicks who've gotten their hands on one of these little hardware devices and naturally start plugging in the 10, let's say, most common passwords, hoping you've been stupid. However, it's a different story if you've been blabbing that you're a Bitcoin millionaire. Some people have been kidnapped, had a gun put to their head, and held for crypto ransoms. It's the latest and greatest kind of violent crime. It's happened before, mostly in Russia and the former Soviet republics. Yet I haven't heard of a single instance here in Latin America. You can bet it will, but lag time will prevail. All right, so speaking of alternatives to storing your wealth or your cash, there's always gold and precious metals. In fact, many of the big worldwide gold and precious metal dealers are now taking Bitcoin and alt currencies for payment directly. But again, most of them have arranged it through intermediary software companies and wallets like BitPay. So again, you can buy gold, platinum, or silver with your crypto. First, you have to get it into a BitPay or a Coinbase wallet. And like I said just a moment ago, you don't want to keep your mother load there, but you have to use them to make the transaction, so go ahead and do it. But just transfer the amount necessary to make the deal. Just a few tips here, just my opinion, all in the interest of keeping your mother load safe. Doesn't matter if your mother load's $3 million or $300. Mother load, I guess that would be un-PC if we were in the States, right? Man, am I glad I don't live there anymore. And finally, just to mention, we had a little hotel incident at the Expat Insider Seminar. All right, and I want you to be the judge on this one. Now, as you probably know, a lot of our attendees come down and stay longer than the seminar, sometimes weeks, months, or forever. Anyway, one of our attendees who staying on a little longer, fine, a lot of people do that. So he'd planned some future trips and expeditions. And in the rush to make his connections, neglected to do a formal checkout at the front desk of his hotel. Apparently, he just called to the front desk and said he'd be leaving, never actually going down to the front desk, settling his bill, or handing in the pass keys, which is really the procedure you have to use to check out in practically every hotel. And I know up in the States, they probably have an express checkout where you just drop your pass keys in a little outbox, but I haven't seen that down here. So why am I bringing this up? Well, he's wondering now if he's going to get on some kind of hotel blacklist or they're going to block his passport, whatever, when he tries to leave the country. Well, for sure, I don't think any of that's going to happen. But the hotel is saying he owes for two extra nights. Meanwhile, he says he called down to the front desk and canceled over the phone. So anyway, just a heads up, you got to do things kind of old-fashioned and formal down here. So the hotel's got their point, the way they do things, and he's got a point, the way they might be doing things up in the States, but this is not the U.S. And as for me, you know, I've traveled a hell of a lot, and I've never checked out without handing in the keys and settling the bill. You know, you at least get a printout, right? So in the end, I think the hotel's got a bigger leg to stand on than he does. Though this is a first-world hotel, and they do aim to please, so we'll see how this all shakes out.
South of the border.
This is the Expat Files, living in Latin America. If you want me to help you out with your own Plan B, just schedule a one-on-one consult. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to learn how to move forward with your own Plan B from right up there in the States, go to www.expatplanb.com and check out my three videos. See ya. Nos vemos.